KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
Thanks for joining us this morning. We're excited to have another very special guest with us today. And as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Well, we're very excited to have our guest today as Dr. Saul Jimenez-Sandoval. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
So happy to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And the date we're looking forward to is January 1st, because that is when he will be assuming his new role as the Dean of the College of Arts and Humanities.
That's right. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
So is this the calm before the storm? You have a couple weeks.
Not sure if it's a couple of weeks, but it certainly is an exciting time for me. I'm looking forward to becoming Dean of the College and implementing a lot of really good ideas that I have.
Well, you've been very active in the arts since you were in high school, right? Is that when you took your first language class? And
yeah, I'm trilingual. I speak French as well as my fourth language. Not as well as Portuguese and Spanish, though. Mm-hmm. And I've been exposed to the arts and the humanities throughout my life. In my family life, my siblings were very active in the arts. My brothers are very artistic. They paint, they sculpt. Do everything in between. My sisters are also very artistic, so I've had a homegrown sort of education in the arts.
Well, you could have put on your own theater production because...
We could have. Indeed.
You are the eighth of eight, which I was very impressed to hear that you grew up in an environment of such talented siblings, and you can't help but have some of that rub off, but that also encourages you in finding your own medium.
And I really think that is really what happened. Being the eighth of eight in a family as large as that, and having two parents who are also very strong presences and personalities in my life, a child who is the youngest in this family needs to find his own path in life. And that's why I consciously decided to really be myself with the foundation that my family had provided to me throughout.
Yes, yes. And you also had to learn how to adapt to new situations and new environments. You were raised in Mexico until you were 10.
Right.
And then you had described to me that your father was going back and forth for a few years, and then he really wanted to make the effort for the whole family to be together. What was that like? Do you remember that?
It was quite traumatic, actually. We lived in a house that has been part of my dad's family since the 1700s in Mexico.
Oh, my.
It's a house that is very old and very meaningful because we were all born in that house, my siblings and I. And from being in a small sort of bubble, protective sort of atmosphere where my brother and I would just take off to the mountains and explore, and our mother, you know, knew that we would return somehow.
Right.
She would pack lunch for us and say, see you around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And my brother and I, we grew in nature. We grew with nature. We grew with the birds and the nature that was surrounding us. And then we would just return to our home in the afternoon. And that was basically our Saturday morning. So from that to having a very extensive sort of family and friends connection and network in that environment, to coming to a completely different environment of what Fresno County is, was a life-changing experience at the beginning. It was very traumatic. But then with the support of my siblings and my parents, at the end, I adapted and I grew and I became to truly appreciate what this country had to offer and began to develop my own personality, not so much as a Latino or a Mexican, but as an American.
And starting to see yourself in that role.
Right. And starting to see myself with the background that I had as this rich background from both of my parents are very diverse in their backgrounds as well, and see myself as the product of these two large families that somehow came together. And it's the realization of owning the present based on this past that is yours as well. I am not here merely because I am here. I'm here because both my mother and my father came together, made their life together, And then they taught me about my grandparents and about my great-grandparents and about this sort of like mythical notion of going back hundreds and thousands of years and having the conscience of what it took so many generations, so many sacrifices, so much hunger, so much war, so much, you know, of pain and suffering. What did it take them in order to survive so that I could be here in this present and in this moment? And that in itself gives me the responsibility of the moment. What can I do? What must I do to have the full potential of the present so that my future and the future of my society can be one that is good and promising, and it becomes better each day?
Well, and I think that when you respect the history of your lineage and what everybody who's been before you has put into it, it helps you to realize how important your part is in it, that that you're another block and you're building towards something that's bigger than yourself. Was a lot of storytelling a big part of you growing up?
There was a lot of storytelling when I was growing up from both sides of my family. There's a lot of spirituality that is part of the everyday. A lot of people saying, you know, when a person dies, sometimes their soul remains on earth because they have unfinished business to do. Or when you commemorate the Day of the Dead, you have the consciousness of the present that is yours because of this person that existed before you. You honor these people in the past that have come before you and that have really created a path for you to walk on that's easier.
And the connection doesn't end.
The connection does not end. It moves on. So when one has children, it is that responsibility to really instill in the child, you are part of a greater web that is interconnected.
That was something that I really appreciated in growing up with my grandmother. And I know that Joe with his grandparents, too, was that they told us a lot of stories. This is who you are. And it gave you such a sense of pride that to hear about your family coming from another country and how hard they worked and everything that went into them wanting more for you, but how proud they were with what they were doing and what they could offer, but how all of that poured into you. Then I loved, I never got tired of hearing stories from my grandma. And it seemed like every time you would pick up something new or something different. And then as a parent now, to know it's my responsibility to pass that to my children, for them to know that, like you said, we don't just appear here. We aren't here just for this flash in time. We have a significant reason for being here. And it's the connections that you make while you're here that makes it so much more meaningful. And I think that plays into my love for history and you studied history and the appreciation for language, because when you hear the stories come, especially from your parents in another language or even when it's spoken with an accent, it just has so much richness to it. And it's not something that you get from just anybody. It's unique to them and to the way they relate it. And it really, you know, takes a hold in your mind and in your being.
It does.
When you receive a personal story like that.
Yeah, I think there's a sense of dignity in knowing the origins and in knowing the past and in truly appreciating what the mother and the father and the grandparents have done for you. I think there's a sense of dignity and awe at the same time. How could you have done that, you know, at that period of time? And I love to take my kids to my dad on Sundays. My mother passed away 5 years ago, and he is the connection to that past that they must have in order to know themselves. I believe that self-knowledge is integral. It's essential for the formation of the person for the future. And I truly value these stories, these personal stories of what had to be endured in order for someone to actually be here. It's comfortable to see someone sitting in a sofa and say, you know, he's fine. That's it. You know, he's always been like that. But it's something else to actually think to oneself, he had to go through loneliness and this and that and sacrifices and a lot of hard work. And that brings an appreciation that just enriches the person's dimension to no end, I think.
I always like to talk to my grandparents about what were your hopes and dreams, like when you were 20, when you were 30, because it changes as you go through life. But, you know, what did you do when you were 15? Right. What type of things did you do? Right. And why did you do that?
Your toys. What were your toys?
I love asking that. It's so different. And just to get the feel for them, like you said, you see someone on a couch, you just imagine them always being on that couch. But that's not the case.
That's not the case at all.
That's where they are after being weary from a life of doing a lot of things.
Yeah.
So how do your two children react to spending time with your dad?
They truly appreciate my father. Oh, my father is very crafty with his hands. Mm-hmm. He makes toys for them out of wood.
<That's> so sweet.
In his free time.
Yes.
The latest thing he's making for them is a harp. Because my oldest wanted a harp, you know, because he was studying Greek mythology and he would keep seeing these harps. So he's making a harp for him. So they truly have this connection. They appreciate him very much. They like to go outside into his small little farm that he has and see the trees. And, you know, he teaches them how to prune and how to really have that connection to the land.
Right.
You know, that must keep going, I think.
Oh, that is great. That's such a gift that you're giving them by making that a priority.
Thank you.
And that's wonderful that you and your wife see the value in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's go back to life in Fowler. After you arrive, what was your high school experience like?
You know, when I entered high school in the States, it was difficult because I had been here for not a long time at that time. And I was not fully secure about my language skills, even though I could speak very well and I could write very well. I adapted quite quickly in the language aspect of things.
Mm-hmm.
I still had that internalized sort of fear of not being able to produce the right words or the right sentences or the right language, you know, at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
So my freshman year was just a year of exploration, being the sort of deer in the headlights sort of thing.
So were you perceived as being the shy guy?
I was perceived as very shy at the beginning. I was not very outgoing. I had a group of friends who was close to me, but I was really not a very sociable kid, even though I had been an extremely sociable kid, you know, growing up, you know, back at home. So it took some time for me to realize that I could contribute, that I could integrate, that I could fully be part of the fabric of the society. So that first year was sort of a tentative year. But by the second year of high school, by the time I was a sophomore, I was already fully integrated into the honors classes. And that gave me the security that I needed.
Great. Well, that's very fast to go straight into honor classes.
Very fast. You know, that shows many of us only know one language.
Well, along those lines, do you think that some people have a certain ear that's more in tune with picking up languages easier than another person?
I actually do believe that some people are attuned more to picking up languages than others. I know that from a personal experience. I have certain gifts that my siblings don't have, but they have certain gifts that I certainly don't have. My brother, who is 2 years older than I am, Alfonso, he's extremely talented with his hands. He is an incredible landscape architect. He does anything you want him to do, he can create. He redid his entire house his own from scratch. So I cannot ever dream of having that talent. So that's his talent. My talent is in languages and in writing and in expressing myself, I suppose.
So what made you choose the languages that you're fluent in?
I started in college. I took some languages in high school. I took Spanish in high school because that was what was offered back then. And in college, I began to take history classes and bio classes. I was very interested in the biological aspect of knowledge. And at that time, I truly saw myself in history. I began to shift from the very mathematical, scientific sort of areas into the more humanistic aspects of my life. And I began to explore history because I saw a need for me to learn history, to know my history, to be myself. And when I then shifted to the history degree, I had to take a foreign language and I took Spanish. And when I started taking Spanish, I identified myself with the literature. I identified myself with the language in ways that I had not before.
So it really made it come to life for
you. It did, because my professors were people from Latin America and Spain who really brought a perspective of worth into the language that I was learning. Before, I was learning the language just because I knew it and because it was something that I had to do.
Right.
I went from that to actually appreciating this dimension.
Beautiful.
This backstory, this meaning of hundreds and thousands of years of tradition within the Spanish-speaking world that is not just Latin America, but also Spain. And then from there, it was a very natural shift to go to Portugal. Portugal and Spain share a boundary that has been there, you know, for so many years. But in reality, it's the Iberian Peninsula as a totality that I became interested in exploring. And I began to learn about Saramago and his writings and his vision of what it is that these two people who are perceived as different at the end are actually quite compatible. They're actually quite similar to each other. And I just fell in love with Portuguese. I took Portuguese for a year and then I went abroad. I went to Portugal and I lived there for 6 months and I came back speaking Portuguese fluently.
Wow, I think that's even fast too. 6 months, that's pretty fast to pick up a whole nother language. But when you're speaking about that, it seems to me like you were captivated with the evolution of language over the course of time.
I was. And I became captivated more than anything with the similarities between the languages, with the commonalities of what the people, right? And before I would perceive Portugal and Spain as two different entities, Portugal and Mexico, Portugal and Argentina or Chile or whatever else, as different entities. And that's when I became to see the incorporation of all of these people.
The blending.
The blending. And then I saw commonalities between the Portuguese, the Spanish, and the French, and then the Italian later on. And then pretty soon, the English-speaking world came into view as well. We are all truly one human family. We speak different languages. But at the end of the day, I became fascinated by the fact that during dinner time, we would all come together and we would all enjoy the food. We would all talk about the things that were interesting to us.
Right.
Love and loss and pain and death and historical processes that were important to us became part of our conversation, and meaningful conversations then led to meaningful friendships from people from all over the world.
From all over. That's a very good point. So were you the first in your family to attend college, or did some of your siblings go to college?
By the time I went to college, my siblings had gone to college before me.
That's a great achievement for your parents.
It was a great achievement for them.
That's beyond belief.
Yeah, but they had stayed locally, some of them. Some of them had gone to universities in Mexico as well. So by the time I came of age and I decided to go away, because I felt, coming from a large family, that it was very difficult and it was very painful to actually say goodbye to my parents and say goodbye to my family and my friends that I had, you
Your
know,
big support,
my structure. Big support system that I had here. And I had roots here already. And I left and I went to Irvine, to UC Irvine. And it was difficult, but at the same time, it was a necessary thing for me.
What was it about the program in Irvine that really attracted you? You could have went anywhere. What was it about that program that made you want to go there?
That program at that time had one of the top programs in biology and also in history. And then later on, I found out Spanish was the number two program in the country when I entered it. So it really had to do with the faculty, the investment of energy and time of the faculty in the student. And that, more than anything, made me feel connected to the university. And now that's what I see here. That's why at the end, when I had job offers from other universities, I chose Fresno State, because I saw that our faculty have that same connection to our students. It's that same bond that we shared with them that I think makes them feel welcome and makes them grow into individuals that will later contribute to our society in very positive ways.
And you've actually patterned that in your own career by directing over 26 masters.
Right. right,
theses,
yeah,
which is a big undertaking. That takes a lot of time on your part and a lot of extra mentoring and guidance to the student. So for you to be able to willing to offer yourself in that capacity, I'm sure that means a lot to them.
It meant a lot to them, but it meant a lot more to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to compare, of course, but I think at the end,
right,
I felt that it was a glass ceiling that had to be broken.
Mm-hmm.
The master's program had not had a thesis in over 15 years when I arrived.
Oh my goodness.
And I felt that the potential of the students, my students in Spanish were the most dedicated, the most loyal students I have ever known.
Mm-hmm.
They were so dedicated to their studies. I would give them books and books and books to read, and they would return to me the following week with them having the rest of books.
Oh my goodness.
And they would ask for more.
They were hungry for it.
They were hungry for it. And I would give them ideas, and then they would go home and bring back these incredible interpretations of very ancient texts, very difficult texts to interpret, medieval Spanish texts, mm-hmm, with very old Spanish, that they dutifully and very studiously would sit down and just decode it all.
Oh my goodness.
And that was just exciting. It was exciting to me. It
makes you very proud to be a part of that,
yeah,
and to see them want to grow in that way and challenge themselves.
Absolutely. And to see the final product, really. The master's thesis is so valuable because it's a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a journey of exploration because you're not in a classroom. You're not with your peers. You're with your computer, with the screen,
mm-hmm,
and then with your professor, really.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it is you and the computer screen that are there. And it is really when your thoughts as an individual come out. And it's funny because every single student chooses something different, mm-hmm, because every single student has a different personality.
Right.
So the topic is relevant to the student because it is relevant to that student's life.
Mm-hmm. And the way that they're able to express themselves, you know, I think that the more I hear you talk, the more it just seems like such a perfect appointment for you to be the dean of the College
thank you,
of
Mary.
Arts and Humanities.
I appreciate that comment.
Absolutely.
Because the College of Arts and Humanities deals so much with expression.
Right.
Expression
right.
Through so many different venues and mediums.
Right, right, right.
And you're constantly communicating either a feeling,
right,
an emotion,
right,
an experience.
Right. A thought.
And your appreciation for all of those things and your appreciation for different forms of art, it's so impressive. That,
thank you.
You know,
I appreciate that.
That you recognize the value in other ways of expression.
Yeah, my college really deals with the expression, the artistic and humanistic expression of the individual,
mm-hmm,
whether it be a humanistic thought in various topics dealing with the ethical procedure of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
How must we act? Should we act this way or this way?
Mm-hmm.
Which is housed in philosophy, really, or with the crafting of a new written language housed in linguistics for our indigenous languages in the area, or mm-hmm, with the preservation of these indigenous languages, again, with the linguists, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the analysis of hundreds of years of English literature housed within English, or the theatrical reproduction of a thought housed in theater arts.
Mm-hmm.
These are all interconnected. How must I express myself? How should I express myself in housing communication,
mm-hmm,
or art and design, which is the department that really fosters the artistic exploration of painting, of sculpting,
mm-hmm,
of, you know, everything in between.
Right.
And it is really the individual at the end that comes to the forefront and says, I want to express myself through this painting.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my mother-in-law saying to me, she's an artist herself, and saying to me, you know, when I was a child and I was growing up in Greece, my wife's family is Greek,
mm-hmm,
I got in trouble because I was in school and I couldn't stop drawing legs. And that's just
right.
That's just the artist, you know, in
yes,
someone. They can't help themselves.
Right.
And it is that which we need for our society. We need, mm-hmm, these artistic and humanistic expressions so that we know where our values lie.
Mm-hmm.
We know how we can move on as a society together, collectively.
I think another important element is, especially when you're in a college, is having it be open.
Right.
Having everybody be open to and respect the other way that
right,
a person is going
right,
to present
right, right,
something.
Right, right, right.
You can set something on a pedestal and everyone will paint it differently.
Right, right, right.
Or you can have an experience and the stories that are written or the songs right. that are sang about right, it right, will right. be completely right. different depending on the life journey of the person right. who's doing it.
Right, right, right.
But to also recognize that just because this is how I see it right. is not the only way it
right,
is. And
right, right.
to respect each other when you're seeing it relate in different ways, and to let the students know that if you right. only want to draw legs, it's okay if you only
right,
want to
right,
draw
right,
legs.
Right, right.
But I like drawing hands, you
right,
know,
right, right,
but
right, right.
not to see one as being superior or
right.
inferior to the other, but respecting all of it as
right.
being beautiful ways of relaying the human experience.
Right. And that's really key. If we see, for example, our fascination with Yo-Yo Ma, the
mm-hmm.
cello player,
yes.
right? Why are we fascinated by him dealing with music? If we
mm-hmm.
see the fascination with the musicians that we have in our college, which are world-class musicians,
yes.
we see it because a cello or a violin or any other instrument will sound differently with one person and with the next person. And that's truly the value of seeing
mm-hmm.
that color in the spectrum of the individual, of that
mm-hmm.
that particular manifestation that that individual has in the artistry or the humanistic aspect
mm-hmm.
that is really key.
And I feel like I'm most appreciative when I'm observing something that I know I am not capable of doing.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
When I can see that somebody has painted a picture that just really touches you in a certain
right.
way, and I can feel emotion conveyed by it, but know that I'm not capable
right.
of doing that. And
right.
thank goodness someone is.
Right,
thank
right, right.
goodness.
It's fascinating how some people can have a talent that you don't have any capacity for. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and vice versa. It's amazing when I see people draw paint. I can't draw or paint. That's never
right.
going to happen for me.
That's me.
But I'm glad that there are so many different ways of expressing ourselves. And
I agree.
I think that you're going to do an amazing job.
Thank you, Mary.
And it's a, you know, it's a large college here, too. You have 2,250 students
mm-hmm.
that are majoring in the nine
we do.
Departments.
We do.
But over 4,000 students are enrolled in classes.
That's right.
The
yeah. We are the largest college as far as full-time equivalent students are concerned. So we offer the most classes
uh-huh.
to the most students. We carry 25% of the teaching load of the entire university.
Wow.
That
so
is amazing.
We are a key college to the university because if we go back to the original conception of what a university is,
mm-hmm.
it is our disciplines that really create the foundational concepts for what we are. What is a university? I love the word in Greek. It's panepistemio, which means pan is all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or all encompassing. Epistemio means knowledge. So it's all knowledge. And it is really our quest for the knowledge, our quest for the expression of what it means to be human that we seek out in our college.
How does your wife feel about this new quest that you've taken on? Is she excited?
Mariana is excited.
Oh,
she's
wonderful.
Excited. Yeah, she's very supportive of me. Without her, it takes a team.
Yes.
It really does take a team. And she is my foundation. She is the basis from which I grow and I think. She's my sounding board for my ideas.
Wonderful.
Sometimes I dream beyond my limitations, but it's good to be like that. And she's a philosopher that says, you know, you need structure. How will you go from point A to point B to point C? So it's good to have her around.
Well, it's good to have big dreams, too, because I read when you talked to the collegian, you said you never imagined yourself being in this position. And here you are.
Here I am. Yeah, here I am. Now that I am here, I envision myself as a good force that will integrate the college, that will give the college a voice to truly know itself. I want to create bridges between our departments. I want to showcase the talent that we have
yes, definitely.
In the arts and the humanities. I want to create a newsletter to share it to the world, to share the good news of what we are producing in the college.
That's a great idea.
I want to really let others know the incredible talent that we have, the incredible students that we have, how it is that we influence, we transform, we continuously strive to
mm-hmm.
become better and better at what we do in the college.
Well, we're very excited to hear about how you're going to celebrate
Thank
the
you,
talent
ma'am.
Of our students here. But today we celebrate having you as a new dean. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you. That's very humbling to me. And I appreciate the opportunity to have the space with you and with Julie to share my thoughts and my history, really, and to see how we can both collaborate for the future of the college and the university.
Well, congratulations, and thank you again for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again to our very special guest, Dr. Saul Jimenez-Sandoval, and of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.